Today is Sunday, February 26th, 2017. I'm suffering the after effects of the long journey back from Eilat, so my voice is not perfect, but Be'ezrat Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam will give strength and we'll be able to give the shiur. Everything worked out?
Yeah, okay. I haven't heard yet, but I'll take a few weeks.
Okay, good, good. We have to thank that gentleman. Okay. A number of interesting comments on things we've spoken about. Is everyone sitting? Look at this solution. Remember we spoke about the problem with the Kohen being a rabbi and handling funerals. So a young man who's listening to the shiur in South Africa, Aharon Altman, I believe his father's a rabbi there, he says in Cape Town, our Beitin built a special ohel where there is a gap between two halves of the room, making it two separate rooms for the purpose of Tumat Ohel. Therefore, Kohanim can be on one side and the coffin is on the other side. And it means if the Rabbanim are Kohanim, they can eulogize from the other side. I have to say that. Would have that in Uman, okay? That has to be his father. Right. Now, Rabbi Grinstein, who is involved in Geirut, so he picked up on what I said, how the but they didn't work, the ones on the Tzohar and Rabbi Rosen. But he writes that the problem is, what I say is very beautiful, that the couple is living here. What if people are come from Chutz Laaretz and they want to convert? And you don't know them as well as you know the people living here. So he says they must have a letter of recommendation from the rabbi in the community they're coming from. And they have to be sure that this is an honest desire. And then they require each prospective convert and their Jewish boyfriend or girlfriend to write a Jewish life story telling where they were and where they are in terms of Jewish observance. They need three or four letters of recommendation from the people of that community that they started to become active in the shul and are sincere. And then, of course, they're assigned to a family here. So at least they're trying to do everything possible. Rabbi Grinstein writes another letter relating to burial of someone that didn't complete a conversion. And he says he had the problem here. Someone living in Israel in the midst of the Geirut Tahalich died of cancer before Mila, Tfila, Kabbalat Mitzvot, and they worked with the Chevra Kadisha and buried him in the Jewish cemetery. In this case, they buried the person. I'm trying to say where he says it, but if I recall correctly, it was deeper in the ground, not Yudamot, if I'm not mistaken, into the ground. And yeah, Yudamot Tfachim, which would serve as a mechitza from the others buried around him. So there too, they found a nice solution. All right, I have to say that the question we dealt with Sydney, Australia, by far is one of the funniest questions you'll come across in response to literature. Could you imagine the Shliach Tziba comes in, sees that everyone is a Mechalel Shabbos, reads the whole Parsha, and they throw him out afterwards. Miman of Shach, if you can't count Mechalel Shabbos, how can you lay in? You need a minion. And if you're laning already, because they're 10 Mechalalei Shabbos, give them a liyat. All right, these are very delicate questions that people in the rabbinate face. I would say that certainly in the YU rabbinate, and Chabad rabbinate, and probably in many others, we do count the Mechalalei Shabbos. We try to be Makarifim. And there's no question that the Mechalalei Shabbos Bezman Hazeh is not the Mechalel Shabbos of 200 years ago. Unfortunately, we who are Shomer Shabbos are in the minority. And most Jews have the same concept, like Rav Moshe says so insightfully and brilliantly, being a Shomer Shabbos is chumrah, it's not Ma'ika Hadin. That's the way they view it. And it may change over the next 100 years. It certainly is changing in the state of Israel, but we have to live with this reality. And even in the state of Israel, I wouldn't push away someone who's Mechalel Shabbos. I can tell you a sad story. He is now on the Supreme Court. And this is a person of Sephardic origins, raised in Chinuch Atzmai schooling. And he was very prominent in a government office, Mishrat HaMishpatim. And one time when Eliakim Rubinstein was the Attorney General, he had Yartzeit. And he tried to make a minyan so he should be able to say Kaddish. And he had 9 people. And he called over this individual and said, join us. We need a minyan. I want to say Kaddish. And this person answered, Chinuch Atzmai, graduate, I haven't davened in 25 years and I don't intend to daven now. And he walked away. And wouldn't be the 10th person to the minyan. All right, they got a minyan afterwards, but a person like that, I don't know whether we can count them for a minyan. And that's someone raised in a proper home with a proper chinuch and a proper education. But we all know. Okay, now I want to begin a very fascinating topic. It's going to lead us to a very important source. I'm calling now from Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Yudchet, Siman Ayin Zayin. And this tshuva was written in 1978. And it's written to someone named Meir Chaim Kinzberg. And this individual, it doesn't say where he lives, could be he's living in Israel, where this is more common. Could be it's Chutzlaritz, I don't know. But he turns to Rav Menashe Klein and he says, why do we have to daven with a hat bisman hazeh? Davening with a hat originally, and I'll give you the sources, was simply that when we get dressed up, when we meet an important person, we wear a hat. And nowadays, we don't wear a hat. When we meet an important person, we keep our kippah on, and that's the way we meet him. And I need not tell you, Maisim B'chol Yom in the State of Israel, let's say, give you a simple example, Chol HaMoed Sukkot. The President of Israel has Kabbalat Kahal in his sukkah, in the President's mansion. Thousands of people come, mainly tourists. You have to have identity, and you walk through the gate. Obviously, they check for security, and you meet the president. Neither the president is wearing a hat, neither the thousands of people coming to see him. Could very well be the president is wearing a kippah. He probably is. He's a Shomer Shabbos, a Rivlin, standing in the sukkah. Could be most of the people are from people. They've come only a la regal. They're wearing kippot. They are not wearing hats. This is a very interesting question. What are the sources? So what Menashe Klein quotes, you open up the Chaye Yodam. Hilchat Tfila, Klal Chaf Bet, Sif Chet. And he's talking about how we have to dress to daven. Fine. And I quote, Vayosim Kova Barosho, Kiderech Sheholech Barachov, Veloba Kova Hakatan Shetacheta Kova, Oshlaf Mitz. I'll explain that in a second. So you see, he paskins la halacha very clearly, you have to wear a hat. You want a proof that you have to wear a hat? Go to YouTube and knock in, I don't know if they're earlier versions, but I was sent the link to the 1952 seventh game of the World Series. And you see thousands of people, tens of thousands of people sitting there, suits, ties, hats. That's the way people dress. That's to go to a baseball game. Alacha kama v'kama, you're invited to the White House. Going to go with a hat? So you see, the Chaye Adam, it's not today. Today, to go to a baseball game, I can't believe anywhere in this wearing a hat, but you might if you're sitting in the sun, so you're wearing a cap. But times have changed. Who goes to a baseball game with a suit, with a tie, with a jacket?
Yeah. That's when President Kennedy became president.
President, right, the inauguration.
All the time, even religious people, you know, every movie you see from the 30s, the 40s, every man
is wearing a hat.
Everyone's wearing a hat.
So that's why he's asking the question. That's why he's asking the question. How can you be everyone? You don't have to be Jewish to wear a hat. It was considered a proper deportment. Derech Eretz. So he paskins the chayadam that a kippah is not enough. A shlaf mitz means that evidently they wore a special kippah when they went to sleep. I know I wear a kippah when I sleep. I'm not paskin la halacha. You don't have to. I'll tell you a good story in a second from Shayagun. His son just died last week. Shayagun is writing in one of his books, he's describing the Maggid in Yerushalayim, Yadla, Ben Sion Yadla was the Maggid 100 years ago, terrific Maggid, Meisha Rimeria. So he's giving the Jews hell. What are you going to give these Jews hell? They're Shemesh Shabbos, they daven three times a day. So he says, when you go to sleep and you turn over, your yarmulke falls off your head. That's why he's giving them Musa.
Yadla, did you say?
Yadla. Y-A-D-L-E-R. Yadla.
Oh, I thought you said Yadlin.
No. Yadla. It's a well-known family from the Yishuv HaYashan. So evidently, I have a different... I don't wear a kippah sruga. I wear an old-fashioned kippah like we wore when we learned in YU in the 50s. It hugs your head better. Generally, it doesn't fall off. So, that's the Chayei Adam. Fine. Take the Chayei Adam. We now go to the Mishnah Brura. And the Mishnah Brura paskins. I'm quoting now from Hichot Tfila Simen Tzadi Aleph, Sim Asif Hei. The Mishnah Brura paskins. Lo yamol ba'afundato. All right, what does it mean, afundato? So you look into the Mishnah Brura, it's a wallet. The people evidently wore a belt, and the belt was hollowed out, and in the belt they kept their money. So when you go to daven, that's not respectful. You don't wear that type of belt. For lo barosh mugula, you don't stand with your head uncovered, and not with Miraglayim Mugulim im. But look at the Mishnah, look what the Shulchan Aruch adds. Im derech anshei hamakom shelo yamdu lifnei hagdolim elo bevatei raglayim. And what is the Shulchan Aruch saying? That this is a subjective matter. What is considered proper dress has to be judged by the way you would act in that community. And here you come, socks, when you meet the president, or meet the king, or meet the chief of staff, or meet the prime minister, do you have to wear socks? If you wear socks, then you have to wear socks when you daven. I mean, this comes up, halacha lemaisa, in the shtiblach, time and again. You get people who are kibbutznikim, who are moshavnikim, who live in Eilat during the summer. Do they wear socks? Absolutely not. Come into daven? Can they walk in and daven without socks? Bermudas. No? Can you daven in Bermudas? in the Shtiblach in Katamon, the law is, I don't use the word halacha, you can daven in Bermudas, but you can't daven for the Yomid. That's the way the
Shtiblach...
That's Ani's law, exactly. That's the way the Shtiblach run. Socks is an interesting question. What about women? What about Sniyot? I remember when in the Mechlala they required the women to wear socks. There was a big outcry because many of the women said this is Minhag Beit Yaakov. This is not the Minhag of the people that are out of Beit Yaakov. Don't know what goes on in the Mechlala today, but with the woman it's a similar question of Sniyot. As a man, I have to say, I could never understand why socks are so important. I don't want to elaborate, but it's a subjective question. But here you see the Mishnah Brura in Sif Katan Yudbet. He quotes the Chaya Yadim word by word. And just as when you go to sleep, you wear a sleeping hat. When you stand in front of important people, you have to wear a regular hat. And if this is the case, when one davens, your kippah is not enough, but you have to wear a regular hat.
But this is not
the minhag. Yitzchak, we're just rubbing the surface, but obviously I daven without a hat, but many daven with a hat. I wore a hat until I came in Aliyah. Until a year after I came in Aliyah, I davened Nusach Ashkenazis pronunciation till a year after I came in Aliyah. But 48 years ago, I faced a tremendous problem. My daughter started laughing at me when I made Kiddush. They started laughing. So I made a very wise decision after talking and learning with Rav Shlomo Gorin that if I'm going to be an Israeli, I'm an Israeli. And like Rav Avadja Paskin's in theory, if you get off the plane and you Amata Neder and say, I give up being an Ashkenazi. From this moment on, I'm going to live Lefi Eidot HaMizrach. Mora Diara is Moran Beit Yosef. You have become a Svardi. And there are many tshuvot on this. So I became a partial Svardi, and it was a very intelligent decision. And thank God, my daughters turned out to Baruch Hashem. I have nothing to be ashamed of. But I had to become part of their world because this is the Torah world in which they are growing up. Be it as it may, the question is a real question. Can we daven without a hat? The person asking it is asking sincerely. Everyone davens without a hat. Everyone meets important people without a hat. Everyone goes to the White House without a hat. You all know that there have been articles in the New York Times that in Barcelona and in Italy, where they make all the hats today, the main purchasers of many types of hats are religious Jews. The Chassidim, the Litvisha,
And rap artists.
Rap artists, Baruch Hashem. But the main, I still believe there are more Chassidim and more Litvisha yeshiva boys than there are rap artists. Okay, so the question is fascinating. And what's interesting here, you see that, by the way, Herbie, you're younger than I am because you made the trip and I made the trip. You look at me totally healthy and I'm sitting here, you can hear my voice. I have
I'm not younger than you.
If you came back without a cold, I came back with a cold. Oh, you are younger, period. That. The trip is enough to put you under.
Where did you go, by bus?
By bus, yeah. How did you go?
I flew.
But to get to the airport is also a big trip.
Same time, there's no difference.
It was more convenient.
You flew and you landed right in the center and you walked to your hotel.
No, somebody picked us up.
That, but the airport is going to be abolished now. They built that up the city.
And they're building it.
God, it's a dream. You land the airport and the hotels are 5 minutes away walking. Anyway, coming back here. But now you see his hashkafa. And Yomo. And this brings us in to a very basic question. Look at the Hasidic world. Look at the way they dress. If the Vishnitzer Rebbe could go back in time and meet his forebears of 200 years ago, they would be dressed exactly the same way. Just think for 1 minute. Look at the struggle.
Look at the guy who became a transgender woman. He was a rub.
Don't quote the exceptions. Look at the shtreimel. What are we wearing a shtreimel for? You see a Ger HaChassid, July, in Yerushalayim, in Arad, in Ashdod, wherever Ger has big centers. Do you ever see the size of a Ger HaShtreimel?
Sputnik.
It's twice the size. Wow. It's hot. It's warm. What are you dressing like that? Why the black? Why the knickers? A Ger HaChassid wears knickers, right or wrong? What are you wearing knickers for? Look what happened to the Litvishi Yeshiva world. I quote Rakefet to you. There isn't a non-Hasidic Yeshiva left today, basically. None. You don't find it.
How about the Hasidic?
Outside of the religious Zionist world. I told you, my friend Barry Liebman went to a wedding in New York, a YU graduate. He came back. He was flabbergasted. 200 YU guys there, everyone in black and white with black hats. People don't give shayurim without black hats. Right or wrong, people don't eat without black hats. Right here in this building, you have Rebbeim who, when they're giving a public share, are wearing a hat. What happened here? But you see, there's two factors involved. Number one, Yomo, my voice can't see anyone whispering. You have anything to say?
Who is the one who gives the share with the public share with the hat?
I don't want to mention names. If you don't know, I'll tell you privately. Why? What's involved here? Okay, number one, the Medrash already says, one of the great zchuyot the Jews had in Egypt, Shaloshinu et Malbusham. Right or wrong? We're not allowed to change our clothes. There's a Malbim where he indicates, it's unbelievable, open up the Chumash. Yosef Atzadik is told his father is sick. He grabs his two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, and he runs to see Yaakov Avinu. And Yaakov Avinu says, Mi Elu Lach. Who are these kids? What are we talking about here? Yaakov wasn't blind. It's not Yitzchak Avinu. You don't recognize your own grandchildren. I would recognize my own grandchildren anywhere. It's the most precious thing you have are your grandchildren, great-grandchildren. What's pshat in the Chumash? So I said this pshat, but I gave a whole drasha when I was studying for smicha, when we had to give drasha. But I was told that it's the Malbim. The Malbim hints at this, says something similar. What happened was very simple. Where did Ephraim and Manasseh work? They worked in the court of Paro. They worked among Egyptians. They had to dress like everyone else. Whenever they went to see their grandfather, Yaakov Avinu, they changed their clothes.
They were little kids when he took them.
He couldn't have been that little. Herbie, even if they were 2 years old, you don't recognize your own grandchildren.
Yeah, about the clothes you're talking about.
They work. Listen carefully.
They're dressed as Egyptians.
Every time They went to see their grandfather. They changed. This time it was an emergency. Avicha chole. They was informed, come quick. They rushed to the hospital. Had no time to change. Yaakov Avinu was frightened. Me, Elulach, what kind of grandchildren do I have? What kind of goyim? So you see, perhaps there's a concept we have to dress like our forebears, the way Jews have dressed throughout the ages. Yitzchak, hold off. Yitzchak, wait. So Yitzchak will say, if that's the case, we have to dress like Yaakov Avinu. By the way, I used to see people at the Kotel Friday night dressed like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So Yitzchak is asking, but all right, go back 200 years, 300 years. There's another part to it. Yitzchak, I'm not trying to convince you. I want you to understand Reb Menashe Klein and what he's saying.
Yosef, according to the law, is that he represented the first Jew
right.
who actually lived among the Goyim
right.
and yet retained himself right. as a Jew.
So,
and his sons were dead because of that.
Right. So let me quote Rakefa to you. That's why in the bracha he says, "V'yikrovem shmi v'shem avotai Avraham v'yitzchak v'yitku l'rov b'kerev ha'aretz." Yaakov Avinu says, "You're right. They have to live in dual culture. This is the future of the Jew." By the way, that's my vart. I said it. For Rabbi Goldstein or Rabbi Lichtstein, I forget already, I think it was Lichtstein. 50 years later, I hear the Rav on tape saying the same word in Moriah. And then I added to it, Yisimcha bani kefayim uchubanasha. Why do we give a blessing? Why does Yomo bless his sons? Yisimcha bani kefayim uchubanasha. What's wrong with Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov? Simon, good question. Ah, question. Summer of Karachalaya. No? We're saying to the kids, we don't know where you're going to be in life, but no matter where you find yourself, you should be like Ephraim and Menashe, the first Jews to live in dual culture and to remain good Jews. All right? So, I don't want to dismiss it. There's something to be said, lo shinu et malbusham. I admit, I live in the religious Zionist community, and Shabbat I changed my clothes, I put on a white shirt. And if I ever wear a white shirt during the week, I had little grandchildren, I don't know yet with great-grandchildren, they would say to me, Sabu, it's not Shabbat today. I have to explain to them, I'm going to a brit, I'm going to a pidgin haben, I'm going to a wedding, a sheva brachas, I have to speak. When I speak, I generally put on a white shirt, covered hatzibur. Right? That's one side of the coin. There's another side of the coin.
One second, you should drink some water.
I say that it's, I drank, I will drink. Yes, but
the
shame.
Will you lose your voice in a lot?
No, the trip home so exhausted me. All Shabbos I was, my nose was running, and today.
Allergies, probably
allergies. No.
No, it's not
allergies. Eis geschwach, that's all.
Amen.
There's a second side to this. If you recall, I told you I had a special relationship with Rabbi Belkin. Natan is wondering, what's the big deal? You in the yeshiva, he was the Rosh Yeshiva, but this was the 60s, the 50s into the 60s, where the students were no longer close to him. He was so busy with the fundraising and the medical school, all that went into it. And I, whatever the reasons were, we interacted, but remember I told you he sent me to that meeting of the Masons. Okay, I did him a favor, brought money in for the yeshiva, he thanked me. So you come in, here are grown men, among them very successful men, among them what we would call today billionaires. And here they are puffing smoke, the incense wearing like aprons. Yitzchak, am I right or wrong? Aprons. What crazy.
What were they trying to copy the Kohanim?
That's true, but there's a basic reason behind it. You belong. You're part of the crowd. You follow me? Very important. When a chassid meets a chassid, he says, Baruch Hashem, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. You have something in common. A few chassidim meet, a few Lubavitch. There's one Lubavitch in New York who, when I was in, a few years ago, in a different part of Borough Park for 5 weeks, he was so makar of me, and he saw through me. In other words, the average chassid sees Rakesed, he figures, Shay gets a nice laugh. That's the old me. He saw through me. And he would say to me, Medafa bring an epistle. Understand? Call over a few other chassidim. The Rebbe's son also had read many of my books, articles. I mean, for bring, do you understand? You're part, and you talk about the Rebbe, and you tell a chassidish vort, and you tell a story. In a mashbia, I don't know how my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, is. I'll hear from Yomo.
He'll be here Thursday.
I'm not here yet. But a mashbia, it's not just Rav Lesson spoke Musa Machshava. He never told the story. The stories were incidental, but few and far between. A Hasidish mashbia is not just a devatera, a medresh, tells the story. What we can learn from the story. You follow? So you see, you're wearing the same clothes. Now, the Litvish world was conquered by the Hasidic world. There are reasons why. To me, growing up, who had a beard? One kid, I told you, Reb Chaim Heller's grandson, my dear friend, Izzy Perlmutter, grew a beard in high school. Mr. Abrams called Izzy in. This is Reb Chaim Heller's grandson. And he said to him, Yisrael? Israel? He called him Israel. The Rav called him Israel. Israel? This is Thursday? Sunday you will only be allowed back into Talmudical Academy if you do not have a beard. And I can assure you, I'm pretty certain Mr. Abrams wouldn't have said that to Israel Perlmutter without consulting with the Rav on Wednesday, before the Rav went back to Boston. You follow? Who had a beard? Who dressed the same? Who dressed the same in the Lushan? I can tell you in Mir, you've heard the name Reb David Lipschitz, the Tzuvalka Rav? No? He learned in Mir, among other places. Grodno, Mir. The Altamira used to tell me about Reb David Lipschitz. He was unique in Mir. I said, what do you mean? He had a lot of Iluyim there. Nah, he wasn't the biggest Iluyim. But he went with a beard. Who had a beard? Nacha Bacha. Before he was married, he already had a beard. Already Reb David, you know, had that certain deportment. While he was still a Talmud, you saw Frumkeit with him. That wasn't popular in Mir. You understand? Litvish yeshiva were different.
Beard makes Frumkeit?
Herbie, please, we're talking in popular language. Most people with beards are from. There are people with beards who are thieves, robbers, murderers, rapists, seducers, but most are from. I hope. You're living in Israel too long. Don't take the news so seriously. So, you see, in the world today, we are so challenged. The Litvish yeshiva, there's a lot of common sense to this. Dress in black. Dress the way all the Frum Jews dress. You're part of the club. You're a Mason. Don't disgrace the Masons. Don't disgrace the yeshiva. Don't disgrace your heritage. Herb is right. It doesn't work all the time. But I would say 90% of the time it works. Okay? So, even though we are religious Zionists, and even though Giddy's not wearing a uniform and he's wearing a yellow shirt, there is something to be said for the Hasidic and now even the Litvisha lifestyle that we all dress the same, Shaloshi Nuat Mabusham, and when we get up to Daven, we put on a hat and a jacket, and we're dressed with a white shirt and black pants, etc. And this is the question he got. Now, in parentheses, I just want to tell you, I shock Yomo Friday morning. Friday morning, if you saw the front page of Yisrael Hayom, two pictures of two from Jews. One Rabbi Metzger, you saw what happened, it made big news all over the world, that the judge threw out the plea bargain and told him, you're lucky, I'm not giving you 7 years, which you deserve, but he upped the jail time to 4.5. Next to Rabbi Metzger was Ari Harrell's picture with the yarmulke and all, advisor to the prime minister, conflict of interest, he's being indicted, we'll see what happens. So I told Yomo, I better get used to giving she'orim in jail, because both these men, I taught their wives. Rabbi Metzger's wife, Ofra Friedman, was my student in the Israeli Division Mechlala, and Ari Harrow's wife was my student in Machon Gold. So you see, Rabbi Metzger is wearing a uniform. It didn't help in his case. But what the judge was saying to Rabbi Metzger, if I can spell it out, is very simple. You who represent Yiddishkeit, you who wear a bekesher, you who wear a black hat, these were your actions, taking all this graft bribery. You follow? 90% of the time it works. 10% is like Kirby says, wearing black and a black hat doesn't make you from. But the Mishnah Halachit goes crazy here. You absolutely have to wear a black hat. You absolutely have to continue what the Mishnah Brura paskins. You absolutely have to continue the way of your parents. And we have no right to innovate. And here he quotes a Masechet Kala Rabbati, and this is a fabulous source. And if I don't remember, remind me to tie it in with my lectures in the army. Well, in a minute. First, the source. First of all, do you know what Kala Rabbati is? Do you know what we call the Masechtot Ketanot? Giddy. Shas was formulated and edited by Ravashi at the end of the Amoraic period. Then you have the Savroyim. During that period, you have at the end following, you have Masechtot Ketanot that are not really part of Shas, but has a world of material, halachic and a lot of agada, on the Amoraim, on the Tanoim. And they're called the Masechtot Ketanot. Sansino has a two-volume translation. Professor Higger, Michael Higger, Michael Higger, who taught at JTS in the 20s into the 30s, edited them from manuscript. Very fascinating Masechtot that we don't really study intensely, but we refer to it in Chochmat Yisrael. There's more involvement, because historically it's very interesting what they speak about, how did they know it. So I'm now talking Masechet Kala Rabbati, okay, which deals, you would imagine, with Kala, with Kedushin, but there are many stories in it. I'm quoting Perek Sheni, the start of what's called the Gemara in Perek Sheni. It's right at the start, you can't miss it. And it tells the following story. One time, it's a baraita they're quoting. One time, elderly scholars were sitting, and two youngsters walked in front of them. One with his head covered, and one without a kippah. His head was not covered. The one that took off his hat and was not wearing a hat, Rebbe Eliezer said, he is a mamza. Rebbe Yoshua said, he is a ben nida. Now a ben nida, I've given many lectures on this, but a ben nida, you see, halachically, there's no hal. It's not like a mamza. Mamza cannot marry a regular Jewish lady, right or wrong. He can only marry a mamzeret. But a ben nida can marry anyone. But it's called the pgam. All right, what does it mean? A pgam means there's something the matter here. Let me spend a few minutes on it so you should understand the way I understand the halacha, and many achronim agree with this understanding. If you go into the volumes that came out many years ago in the Chazon Ish, there are four volumes, I think it was Pe'er Hadar. So one of the volumes, they tell the following story. A Talmud came into the Chazon Ish and said, Rebbe, I'm going with this girl, I'd like to get engaged, but her mother doesn't cover her hair. So the Chazon Ish asked him about the family background, and he told him, absolutely break off the shidduch, it's not for you. A few weeks later, a fellow came in, Rebbe, I'm going with this girl, I'd like to get engaged, but her mother doesn't cover her hair. Chazon Ish asked him about the family background and said, Mazel Tov, it's the match for you. Nope, what's the obvious question? Here nor here. Why here yes and here no? So they asked the Chazon Ish. And Chazon Ish, you know, people were sitting there that learned with him, and they said, Rebbe, it's Zveivach Tzirik 2 years ago, weeks ago, you were Asad. Today, the Zel B'Shaila, the same question, and you're Matir. So the Chazon Ish broke into a smile and said, look, the first girl came from a Hungarian home. In Hungary, every married woman covered her head. Chatam Sofer, the frum people were frum. If her mother, an Ungarisha, Hungarian, doesn't cover her hair, it's a sign that there's a religious rebellion there. I said, it's not for you. Who knows how much the girl has been influenced by her mother. The second girl came from a Litvisha house. I need not tell you, in Lithuania, many women did not cover their hair. Women who were married to Gedolei, Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael. How it happened, why it happens, leave me, I need some lectures to make a living on. I've given lectures many times. I have one virtual Belkin, Durov. I mean, I know what I'm talking about. I don't want to give you a list of Gedolim who came to America whose wives didn't cover their hair. Please don't mention names. I have more names than the name you mentioned.
Yeah, but the not mentioning names takes away from the class.
What do you mean? They're all gone. But Yitzchak, I don't want to mention names. But the last one, they all later covered their hair in America. Okay, most. The last one to cover her hair was a well-known Rebbetzin, and the Talmidim of her husband said, yeah, the Rosh Yeshiva's wife now covers her hair when she's losing her hair. She bought a shaitel. There was one woman with us in our tour, must be in her, well in her 80s. I felt like buying her a shaitel, if you understand what I'm saying. So, what does it mean? Your mother doesn't cover your hair? I can guarantee you, if Yomo came to me and said, this girl's mother doesn't cover her hair, marry her. It's a Litvisha home. Yoma will meet a balat tshuva, and Yoma will say to me, Rebbe, her parents knew nothing about Yiddishkeit. She was raised in Siberia. Her mother never went to mikvah. The halacha says it's a pagam. I'll take Yomo and I'll put him in a corner and I'll say to him, how dare you be motzilas ala bat Yisrael? The fact that her mother didn't observe that this girl is a tzadeket and a shomeret Shabbat, marry her tomorrow. Should have been yesterday already. Get the difference? So a bet nidra is not a mamza. All right, not a compliment, but not a mamza. Fine. Watch what happens.
But don't you have to investigate the midas of the person themselves?
We're not talking midas now. We're talking. I want you to know, I had a Talmidah in Machon Gold, 1970s, second generation. Parents were Chassidish survivors. And she brings home a boy. American parents met the boy in Israel. Her parents were hysterical. This boy must be a Ben Nida. Whoever the parents who, there were no mikvah in America. You know, they believed that the mikvah only came after World War II. I wrote her a letter to her parents and to their rabbi that as someone who has a doctorate in Jewish history, I hereby testify that there were mikvot all over America and Canada even before the refugees got there after World War II. You follow? But they married. For all I know is today they have grandchildren. They're happily married. But look what happens here. The kid takes off his hat. No yarmulke. One Tana calls him a mamza. One Tana calls him a ben nida. Rabbi Akiva Omer, mamza u ben nida.
On what basis? Mamzeris, you got to look at
Yitzchak. Take him to a medical doctor. Tell him he suffers from savlanitis. Let him give him a shot and patience. I describe it as savlanitis, the illness of not having savlanot. So that's what Rabbi Akiva said. So they said to Rabbi Akiva, just what Herbie said. What are you, crazy? Why are you arguing with your friends? It's the Lashon of the Baraita. Why are you arguing with your friends? Why do you have to make it worse for the kid? Why are you so sure? It can be a mamza, it can be a beni, but both? Unbelievable. He said to them, I'll prove to you that I'm right. Halach etzalino shel otzat tinok. He sought out the mother of that kid who didn't have the hat on. She was sitting in the shuk and selling legumes. Fine. Amala, he said to her, my daughter, if you'll tell me the truth, I'm going to ask you a question. I want your true answer, honest answer. And if you give me an honest answer, I will lift you into the world to come at the proper time. Oh, her eyes lit up and she said, take an oath. Promise me. Haya Rabbi Akiva nishba b'sfatatav umavatel lo belibo. It's like we say, our fingers were crossed. He, in his heart, he said, what I'm saying shouldn't count. He says to her, I promise you. Now came the question. Vinchazeh, my tivau. How do you know this kalarabati by heart, Yomo? No? I know you have bekiyut, but to know dafka, this esoteric source, my tivau. and she tells the following story. Amale, kishenichnasti lechupa nida hayitin. It was a chupat nida. Pirish me many bali. My husband wouldn't have relations with me. He separated. Uba'alani shushambini viavati etzeh. And the shushbin, one of his friends, unterfuhrers, we say in Yiddish. Shushbin, why do we say that in English?
Best man.
That's the best man, one of the best men. One of his friends saw this beautiful collar. The husband separated, and either he raped her or seduced her. And she became pregnant.
I mean, wouldn't that be an issue of Ishtan? Not so much Nida.
It's in it both. So, no, the kid is both a mamza and a ben Nida. And the Tanoim said, Godol haya Rabbi Akiva, shehichish et rabotav v'chavayrav. Rabbi Akiva was smarter, greater than his friends and his teachers. Be ota shah amru, baruch shegila sodol la'akiva ben Yosef. Wow. At that moment, the Ribbono Shel Olam revealed his secrets to Akiva ben Yosef. Now, before I go further, hold on. Now I want to tie it in with the army. Those of you that are going to go into the rabbinate, so you got to know how to hold an audience. I had a great teacher. You have no idea what the Rav was like, particularly in Yiddish. We have recordings of the Rav out of the 50s. Screaming, shouting, dancing, laughing. What a speaker. He was fabulous. They used to say in the 50s, there are three great orators in the world. Winston Churchill, Abba Ibn, and Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. So now I'm talking in the army. 100 chayalim, 200 chayalim. The last thing in the world they want is to hear a speaker. Half of them would love to go to sleep. You got to catch them. So one of my best lines was, Moraiva Rabotai, today you would have to say, ladies and gentlemen, then you didn't see women around in the army. Moraiva Rabotai, you know I grew up in a yeshiva. I never heard curse words. It was a different environment, but when I heard when I did basic training, I mastered every curse word possible in English, in Arabic, and in Russian. And right away, everyone is laughing, and they want, what about Hebrew? Oh, wonderful question. But there are no curse words in Hebrew. Every word that you grew up on is a halachic concept. Imagine someone calls you a ben nida or a mamza. Oh my gosh. A ben zona. These are the curse words in Hebrew that I used to hear on the streets of Katamon Tet. A ben zona. Alo yotemi ben nida, mamza shekamocha. Every word is a halachic concept. When you curse in Hebrew, you are learning Torah at the same time. You are fulfilling the most important mitzvah of all, v'limadetem et b'neichem. My dear fellow soldiers, start to study Torah. Learn what a ben nida is all about. Learn what a mamzer is all about. Learn what a bemzonar is all about. You'll start to study. It's Yam HaTalmud. It's bigger than the Atlantic Ocean, the Pacific Ocean, Yam Suf, the Mediterranean, the Yam HaMelech, the Kinneret, all put together. And by learning, you will know what your heritage is about, why you are here, why you are a Jew, why we are proud to be wearing the clothes of Tzva Hagana Yisrael. Let me tell you, no one slept through a lecture like that. So I thank Rabbi Akiva, Ben Nidal, Mamza. What concepts? Wow. But our friend, Rabbi Nasha Klein, quotes this Medrash and quotes what the Medrash says afterwards. Echad gila rasho, shmamina gilui rosh, azut kifahu. This is arrogance. Azut metzach. A Jew has to cover his head. When your head is covered, it's a symbol that God is on top of you.
Who was Menashe Klein's friend?
What do you mean, friend? The person asking?
No, Elie Wiesel. Did he wear a kippah?
Elie Wiesel, when he visited with the Menashe Klein, I can assure you he wore a kippah. There is a whole generation today. Look, on last Tuesday, we had a tour on a glass-bottom boat. Okay? So I'm with a group of 37 people. We get on the boat, we're a whole group. And sitting opposite us, it's row against row, is a whole group of older people. And they're two couples sitting opposite me. And they hear me talk English to Malka. And they start speaking English to me. Broken English, this man. So I have a principle. When an Israeli speaks English to me, I respond in Hebrew. So I respond in Hebrew. He says, "Mayim chavrit kazar." How do you know Hebrew? He thought I was a tourist. And we got involved in an endless discussion. We became best of friends. They were a group of retired policemen from Beersheba. And he asked me, we started talking, and shows me in his pocket, a kippah. He says, "I daven, I mitvalel shlosh pamim b'yom in minyan, I mitvalel mei pirkei avot." But that's a certain mentality that comes from Germany, was copied here in Israel. In the Arabic countries, I understand that was the minhag hamakom too. So I don't want to criticize anyone who's from and doesn't wear a kippah. But what this means, when you're walking in front of Gedolei Yisrael and you take off your kippah, that is azus. When you're standing before God, you have to be wearing a kippah. And that's what Reb Menashe Klein paskins l'halacha. Okay. Then he quotes a source. And this is one of the most famous tshuvot the Chatam Sofer wrote. And this source brings us into the entire problem of Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, the fight with the reformers, all that went on in Hungary. It's an open question until today. I want you to know that the Rav sitting at an RCA convention with the rabbis, the colleagues, and much more relaxed than he was in a public forum. So they started talking about the Chatam Sofer Sheet, the Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. This problem came up in America with the OU, with the Synagogue Council. You all recognize the problem. How do we associate with reform, with conservative? So they got involved in a discussion on the Chatam Sofer and his so-called extremism. So the Rav said, and I quote, I'm paraphrasing word by word, the Rav said, "I don't know what I would have done. the Chatam Sofer saw what happened in Germany. He saw that Germany was completely lost to reform, to assimilation, to mixed marriages. You all know the story. So he decided to fight every last innovation was forbidden. He said, the Rav said, could be, had he not fought so strongly, you would have had more from Jews in Hungary. Because he fought so strongly and didn't allow any innovation, the Neologues developed. Neologue was more conservative than reform, but it was no longer orthodox. On the other hand, the Rav said, had he not fought so strongly, could be what happened in Germany would have happened in Hungary, and you wouldn't have had the basic, real strong Orthodox community under the banner, the aphorism, Chadash Rasum in HaTorah, anything new is forbidden. So you see, this was the Chatam Sofer. Now, a doctorate just came out, I told you about it much earlier this year, by Kahana, a fabulous doctorate on the Chatam Sofer and his relation with the Noda B'Yehuda. And the doctorate shows that the Noda B'Yehuda was lenient in certain areas. For instance, all our shaving and Cholomoyed goes back to the Noda B'Yehuda. And I don't want to go into detail. He was matu with the guy, but it's not important now. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. And the Chatam Sofer was all the more machmir on these issues because he lived in the generation after the Noda B'Yehuda, basically, and he saw the breakdown. Once people start shaving and shaving Cholomoyed, the whole concept of Cholomoyed is trampled underfoot. A very interesting doctorate. I would love to have Mori Rebbe read that doctorate around here and be able to discuss it with the Rav, because it's something he raised. Mori Rebbe raised a very fascinating question. Chatam Sofer, was he right or wrong? It has tremendous implications in the 50s. Synagogue council, do we abolish it? Do we remain? Do we keep it? Are we part of it? Go back to Rav Hirsch. Alstrit. I gave so many Sherman this years ago. You know what Alstrit means, right? To walk out of the general Gemeinde, the general community. These are very delicate questions. You know what's the most fascinating part of all these questions? They do not exist in Israel. In Israel, by the nature of our being here and the way we live here and the pressures upon us and the world and the anti-Semitism, no one outside of an infinitesimal minority, no one has ever walked out of the Knesset. Agudat Yisrael is in the Knesset, Mizrahi is in the Knesset, Poli Aguda was in the government, today Aguda is in the government. I just got an email attacking me for my stand against ordaining women with the title rabbi. So anyway, I wrote back what I wrote back. He had a number of strictures in there. So I told him that time will tell who is right. I never argue with anyone about Hashkafa. I quoted the Chamesh Drashot of the Rav, Yosef Yechav. That is my basic thinking. Halacha, I will argue. Either I'm right or you're right. Two of us basically can't be right most of the time. Hashkafa, what am I arguing? In 100 years, we'll look over our shoulders and see who is right. And I have one line there, I hope he appreciates it. A gooder of today is Mizrahi of 100 years ago. If you understand what I'm saying, it's exactly Mizrahi of 100 years ago. Yes, Yitzchak.
Now, because I was a member of the Board of Rabbis, I know this story to be true in Philadelphia. It was a Jewish hospital.
Right.
The board of directors were asked to have a kosher kitchen or a kosher food for the patients. And so they brought it up to the board of trustees of the Reform rabbi, who was so left reform, he voted yes. So they asked him, did you yourself eat shrimp? He said, I have been a member of the board of rabbis all these years. this should be a Jewish hospital that everyone can join. Now, because of his relationship with Orthodox rabbis through the years, the influence on him was positive.
Right. No, there's a lot to be said. Natan, do me a favor. Go downstairs and guarantee two more fellows. We need one, but get two. Liyat the Bitachon, Shama
V'Sacha. You almost said you got three.
Excuse me?
You almost said you got three.
You got them? Yomo, we can relax. We'll have a minion.
I can say that.
Natan. Nefesh B'Nefesh is knocking on Yomo's door. Thanks. I'm sorry for asking you, but I'll repeat what I'm saying. I'll tell you an interesting side story. In the 1990s, I was walking with Rabbaron Soloveitchik's son was pushing the wheelchair, and I was next, holding onto the wheelchair, walking alongside Rabbaron, the old city. So we're talking about synagogue council had just come to an end. So I said to Rabbaron, I don't know why everyone is so happy. The Rav was in favor, and just what you were saying. So Rabbaron said to me, it's food for thought. Look, my brother knew a different conservative movement. He knew a different reform movement. I say, what do you mean? In the Rav's time, they never allowed patrilineal lineages to make you Jewish. That's an unbelievable innovation. It changes the whole face of the reform movement. I would say today 60-70% of the reform movement are probably not halachically Jewish. Then he said about the conservative movement, who would ever dream that people are starting to call for recognition of homosexual rabbis? If you recall, the seminary did not allow homosexuals into the Smicha program. That all changed. Said my brother today would be absolutely opposed. That was Rabbaron's opinion. It's guesswork. But this is a real problem, the reform. Who would ever dream the conservative movement now is debating the issue of allowing non-Jews to be men. In other words, if your spouse is not Jewish, she can be a member of the synagogue too. He can be a member of the synagogue
too. They're not debating it.
They said it already.
Yeah.
Could you imagine how far the conservative movement has gone? Do you know that the conservative rabbis who perform weddings for mixed couples? So you see, this
came before.
One of them was thrown out, and the other one, and he refuses to repent. They say if you, one another one performed the wedding for his own child in the marriage. So it's a very delicate question. It's not the reform and conservative that you knew in the Ravnit or that the Rav knew from Boston in the 1950s.
Now, you know that the Rav would once a year give a lecture to the members of the RA in the Brookline area.
What was RA, Rabbinical Assembly?
The conservative rabbis. Because I have a friend who was a member of, who went, he's a graduate of JTS, very firm, but he would attend.
And who was that conservative rabbi that the Rav was very fond of?
There's a reform rabbi, Shubo.
Shubo, he was reformed.
Reformed.
Wow. And the Rav stood outside at his funeral. He wouldn't enter the temple, but he stood outside. And he said, I have a footnote in the Rav, in the biography, that the Boston Rebbe said about Shubo et Gehota Yiddish in Neshama. And you know about Shubo? He was the Rav, of Patton's division of the tank corps. And when he got out of the army, General Patton, who was all powerful, sent a jeep with him that he was able to use like for another year till he became, got his own car and got back to post-war civilization. And people, old-timers from Boston, used to tell me they remember Schubau driving around in an army jeep, a jeep given to him by General Patton. So he evidently was a very, very interesting character. But the Rav was fond of him, no two ways. The Rav didn't think he was a Talmud Chacham. The Rav told stories with the Gemara, with etc. But evidently was a very decent Jewish human being.
Like you had this guy, William Brown, in Providence, Rhode
Island. Right. He was a friend of Reb Shmuel Belkin. Right, absolutely.
He had the Medrash, translated the Medrash.
Right. I understand their descendants who were from. Along the way, there was a part of the family hit Chabad or hit Yiddish.
How about your neighbor, Dresden?
What about my neighbor?
An Onkelos. He's very famous in Onkelos. He wrote books.
But Dresden is an Orthodox rabbi.
Is he
Orthodox? He's certainly orthoprax, that's for sure. But he's written books. He quotes Seder. He's an interesting guy. He also happens to be a general, retired in the United States Army. And not a brigadier, he's a one-star general.
Which is a brigadier.
If that's a brigadier general, yeah. And a two-star general.
Major general.
And a three-star general.
Lieutenant general.
Well, they got it all figured out.
And a four-star.
General.
And a five-star is?
Eisenhower.
Chief of staff, that's like him. Okay, let me get into this tshuva that Chatam Sofer, extremely fascinating. You'll find the tshuva, Sheret HaTshuvat Chatam Sofer, Choshen Mishpat, Tshuva Kuf Tzadi Aleph. It's Kuf Tzadi Aleph. It's a very famous tshuva. It's written to the Av Beit Din of Tamshinov. Tamshinov. It was a city in Hungary, Austro-Hungary. By the way, a book has been written, Yitzchak, about people who corresponded with the Chatam Sofer and who they were. And he was involved in a bit of battle with the Reformers. And the Reformers made certain attacks against him. And these attacks, what they quoted, influenced the people. And the rabbi had to come up with answers. And what one of their main attacks was, why do we wear a yarmulke today? He says, now it's exactly the question that Menashe Klein received. Nowadays, I quote, that we stand before kings and royalty with our heads uncovered, why do we have to wear kippot in the shul? There is no need for them. It's no longer a sign of kavod. And here the Chatam Sofer gets involved in the answers that I'm going to ask Yomo to check this out historically. And the Chatam Sofer says, you don't know what you're talking about. Why do they take off their hats? And the Chatam Sofer gives the following historical story. Everyone watched the Muslims.
What? Everybody wants?
Watch the Muslims. The Muslims, when they pray, the Muslims take off their shoes. They stand with their stockings on the rugs. That was their sign of kavod. Took off their shoes. So a certain pope comes along, and this pope learned from the Muslims. They take off their shoes as a sign of kavod. But doesn't make sense. We need shoes. We have to walk with shoes. This pope used common sense. Seichel enashi. And he said, instead of taking off our shoes as a sign of kavod, take off our hats as a sign of kavod. We Jews have to do exactly the opposite. we have to be different than the Gentiles. We can't emulate the Gentiles. And therefore, our sign of kavod is to put on a kippah when we come into the shul. We have to cover our head. And the Chatam Sofer has an arichat here, going in why the head covering is so important. It's only in the Beit HaMikdash where we take off. The Kohen had to go yachav, barefooted, in the Beit HaMikdash. You all know a Kohen today, when he does Birchat Kohanim, takes off his shoes. But we don't emulate the Christians, and we don't emulate the Muslims. The Muslims learn from us. They're emulating us. But kavod, we take, put on a kippah. That's the kavod we give. It's not a d'oraita, it's a d'rabbanan. But it shows that we are different than the Christians and than the Muslims. Okay. This was
I was in Connecticut 3 months ago. I went a trip to Rome. I wore a cap all over. I went into the basilica. Take your cap off, but I wore the armature. It didn't bother me.
Yeah, beside the
let you. The yarmulke.
The Pope wears a yarmulke, so why shouldn't you?
But
he wears it all the time.
So, but
this was one battle this rabbi had.
But you know, I had a terrible situation. I took a group of kids from Westchester, Pennsylvania, and because they studied a whole 2 years extra after Bar Mitzvah, which was unheard of in that place.
Right.
Anyway, so I took them to visit YU and other places, and I took them down to Temple Emanuel.
Right.
And Temple Emanuel, the man tells us, if you want to enter, you have
the sanctuary. I write about it in Washington. That's what they told me.
No, we simply didn't go with it. They said, we were taught that out of respect for the Torah and respect for Hashem, you have to have your head covered.
Read, I refer you to Washington, and you'll see the story there with Temple Emanuel and what happened. But now there's a second matter, much more serious than a kippah. It's so sad to talk about this. So sad to that. Remember Avram Geiger? Remember the Reform Movement? The attack against Brit Milah. The Supreme Court here, as stupid as they can be at times, I hope that's past tense now, but when they had an appeal to the Supreme Court here to outlaw Miller and a few more years ago, and it desecrates the child, and it's an operation, and the child doesn't have seichel, and he can't approve it, a trauma and whatnot, the Supreme Court refused to hear the case. Thank God. But a Brit Miller? Now, how do you make a case against the Brit Miller? Very simple. Open up the Chumash. Moshe Rabbeinu bringing his family to Eretz, to Mitzrayim, to get them ready for Yetziat Mitzrayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to kill them. The kids have no Brit Milah. Could you imagine? And Tzipporah does the Brit Milah, Moshe Rabbeinu's wife, does the Brit Milah on the children, right or wrong? Open psukim in Chumash, Hatanda Mimli Atala Mulet. You didn't do it. So the reformers dealing with this poor Orthodox rabbi, if Brit Milah is so important, how come Moshe Rabbeinu did not circumcise his own children? And they are using this. Circumcision can be abolished. It's not that important. We don't need it today. And this is the challenge they throw at the Chatam Sofer. How do I answer them? So you'll see here, there's a whole arichat in the Chatam Sofer. Sakonet nefashat. We have la halacha many times we're not allowed to do a brit milah. For instance, a child's brothers died of circumcision, the blood didn't stop bleeding. What is that called? Hemophilia? There's a medical word for it. And how do you pronounce it?
Hemophilia.
Medical word. All right, you are a pharmacist. You know what I'm talking about. If hemophilia, rodents in the family, you're not allowed to do a brit milah, right or wrong? We don't do a brit milah if the child is not healthy. Lo aleinu, you have babies who die young. You couldn't do a brit milah, so our minhag is to do a brit milah before we bury them. But we don't endanger the child. So the Chatam Sofer says the Jews were in the desert afterwards. He's dealing with the whole problem why there were no britot until Yehoshua reaches Eretz Yisrael and they come out of the desert. There were no britot. Sakonet nefasha. This is not because we're mizalzel in brit milah. This is not because brit milah is not important. Aye, what do you mean sakonet nefasha? It's very interesting. Chatam Sofer, he quotes Rishonim that even though you camped in the desert, well, if you camp in Sinai, do the brit milah. What's the problem? But you never know when the Anan HaKavod is going to move on. And you can't move with children who didn't yet have, just now had a brit milah. Sakonet nefashat, nothing to do with camping. Yes, you can camp, you can be there, but you never know in advance. Suddenly, God decides, we move forward. You can't move with these kids. Sharei lo hayu yodim shum zman mesuyam, matay yesu, matay yachanu. And it was tamid, he calls the Rambam, you'll see, tamid, you face the situation, safek sakana. And even for safek sakana, you do not do a brit milah. But this has nothing to do with zilzel in the concept itself. And he's giving him material, fight back. This is what you have to answer them. This is what you have to tell the tzibur. All right, we'll drop further. We'll leave it for next week in the Chatam Sofer.
I'd like to make one comment.
But this, one second. But this
Chatam Sofer is very important.
Okay.
And that is the thank you, especially with a bad voice and a pharyngitis, that you came to give a share.
What can I do? This
thank you.
The Eibishter should give strength. I have more to do. I have first of all, I have a little surprise here. If you want to see the miracle of the Russian Aliyah, this is where you change money. A whole map of the money changes in a lot. Has the hotels, shows you exactly where they are. I'll tell you what's amazing. There is more Russian in the advertisements than there is English or there is Hebrew. So it gives you an idea what's going on in the country. Russians working there, Russian tourists. Well, number one, if anyone wants that, welcome. But here, this is what I found. Going through my files. One is for Yomo and one is for Avraham.
What is it?
These are stamps. On every letter we mailed in the 70s and in the 80s, we put these stamps on in addition to the official stamps. What does it say, Yomo?
Protest oppression of Soviet Jewry.
Right, and it's a beautiful picture, a Jewish star, with refusnikim in the Jewish star.
Did they deliver those letters? No.
We didn't send it to Russia. If we sent that to Russia, the recipient would be in Siberia. But we sent it here. Okay, so what did we do today? We came into a new area, very fascinating, taking off the hat, getting involved with how we daven. Why do we need the hat? And then it got involved. Why do we need the kippah? And you see that there's a basic concept here, lo shinu et malbusham. Now, I'm not stupid enough to claim that Avram Avinu wore a shtreimel, but for the Chassidim, that represents shelo shinu in the year 2018. And there's something to it. I would be very happy if some of my grandchildren would be Chassidim. I appreciate what Chassidus has done and how strongly the message is needed. I recognize that I'm a voice out of the past. I'm a Litvak, I am. I'm in Volozhin, I'm in Slepotka, I'm in Kletsk, I'm in Lakewood, I'm in YU of a different era. But I recognize the problems that we're up against today and what can be helpful. Pass this back to Yitzchak. Sam Dershowitz returned from the States. This is the latest tradition. If anyone is interested, you're welcome to it. One of the articles say I'm going to quote in the Monday class down the line. Did we succeed?
Hope so.
Okay. This is a very interesting article from a tradition 11 years ago. It deals with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and the one time he met Rav Kook, eye to eye, person to person, in Israel. I'm quoted, you'll see I'm quoted in the article. It's a fascinating article. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat HaMatein Le'yov Koach, I hope a night's sleep will
restore. Get a drink, hot tea.
Be'ezrat Hashem. Tomorrow's a very fascinating shiur dealing with Rav Chutna and his relationship with Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And you literally have a live portrait of Rav Chutna as Rav Aaron Soloveitchik saw him. Be'ezrat Hashem, next Sunday, Monday, we have regular class. And the week afterwards, it's Purim and Shushan Purim. So if you're in Tel Aviv on Sunday, you get drunk there. And if you're in Yerushalayim on Monday, you get drunk here. Very interesting question. Are you chayev to read the Megillah 2 days running? If you're in Yerushalayim Monday, Tel Aviv Sunday, sleeping over, are you obligated to read the Megillah?
What about the opposite?
It's an interesting
question. What about
question. The opposite? Interesting question. There was a professor at Hebrew U who did exactly what you said, because he said killing Gentiles is vulgar. He doesn't like Megillat Esther, and that's the way he escaped reading the Megillah. Now, one second, this Yomo is unbelievable. We have. Is there any?
I got one more, yeah.
You want more?
It's also, it's a little, 2 minutes early, it's only 43.
It's all right, we have to. We have a minute to go. We appreciate your coming. Nu, what do you say? Can you void the Megillah altogether? I would say no.
It's been. Well,
you
choose.
It's a Megillah.
You're traveling back and forth.
And then you go to Beit
Shemesh.
I would think it's Mavata Lamitzvah Tasei Midivrei Sofrim. Do you have to read the Megillah both days? So a lot has been written on it. My own halachic thinking is you can only make a bracha one day. It doesn't make sense that you should be able to make a bracha 2 days in a row. So I would say you would have to read the Megillah Tel Aviv, and if you Yerushalayim the next day, you would read the Megillah without a bracha. But not everyone agrees with me. It's an open question.
I don't read it on 2 days. I don't have a
No, I understand. No. But this is a different question.
No, even here, it's only Yerushalayim.
Right. It's if you're in Yerushalayim, you have a chiyuv.
No, but it is in the end of a safek. I know, that's really another question. Bless them, just safek if the.
No, that's a different question. That's a different question. But here, you. Okay. All right, we have a minion, and so can we meet again in health and happiness? That's with Daniel.